Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. You're going to love her. Her name is Nancy Chadwick. She's an author, writer, essayist, and wife. And I just finished reading her book. Her book is The Wisdom of the Willow, and I can't wait to talk to her about it. So welcome, Nancy.
Hi, Hillary.
Hi. It's great to see you.
Oh, good to see you.
All right. So I know you, well, you had a background before you started writing. Do you mind? I always like to know what people did before and how they got brave enough to start writing. So do you mind telling people about your background?
No, I don't mind at all. When I finished school, I went into advertising. So I worked for Leo Burnett Advertising Agency in Chicago. And I currently live just in a northern suburb of Chicago.
And what did you study? What did you study in college?
Journalism. I was in the College of Journalism, and that's my degree. And in order to kind of go into advertising, I needed to study in the College of Journalism to get that degree. Okay. So I was at Leo Burnett, and I wanted to get into account management. I wanted to tell little mini stories to sell products and services for clients. Yeah. And I couldn't get there in a large agency. So I kind of agency hopped and went to a couple other smaller agencies, a PR firm, but I just couldn't get to where I wanted to be. And that was in the 80s. It was very, to get into account management was very male dominated.
Like for me, and maybe I'm ignorant, but when I hear journalism, I think of like writing for papers or traveling, being a, you know, whatever, you know, a traveling person with a magazine or a newspaper or someone who just writes for a newspaper. Is that what you wanted to do, or that was just a degree you had to get in order to write?
Yes, that was the degree I needed to get. The sequence in the College of Journalism, advertising was in the College of Journalism. So I had to take all these courses, and basically I have a journalism degree, but I have an advertising degree within that college.
So
that's where it fell into at Marquette University.
So it's not like business, right? Normally I would think advertising and marketing would be in a business school, but this where did you go? Was it a liberal arts college?
It's a university, Marquette in Milwaukee.
Oh, Marquette, right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So did they have a business program?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But this was not that. Okay, cool.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of classes I took were a big overview, persuasive writing, editorial. But there was a whole class schedule for advertising. So we did a lot of campaign work, some marketing, you know, so it wasn't very specific. It was broad to get into that study of advertising.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. All right, good. So that's why you went into marketing.
So that's why I did the advertising thing. Okay. I had the journalism, kind of the writing part in the back burner. Mm-hmm. But I was really focused on advertising because I liked the visuals of it. I liked the idea of selling products and making up little mini stories in order to do that, where you devise characters and personalities like Tony the Tiger for cereal. So to make something memorable in order to sell it. But I couldn't get to where I wanted to be. So okay. I left advertising and I kind of took those skills and worked for Bank of America in international corporate banking.
So, now, are you being facetious or no, did you actually,
I'm serious. You got to use
the skills at Bank of America. Wow.
Yeah. So I was working in a kind of a newer department called foreign exchange. And it was basically cash management. So I was learning a new system for FX and, you know, and that's like a whole new conversation that we can put on the side that would take a long time to get into. But so I transferred over into the San Francisco office, which was head office at the time, to see if I could get into a marketing program there. And that didn't pan out. But what did pan out was I met my future husband in San Francisco.
Oh.
So whether it, you know, not a coincidence, it was meant to be, whatever, for me to transfer out to San Francisco. And I worked in cash management there for large corporate and medium sized companies. And then.
So that was all because I used to work down on Wall Street and I know like that was all numbers, right? That in my mind, I'm just wondering where did the writing go undercover?
Yes.
At that point? Because this
basically,
was the numbers. Yeah. FX and all that is just.
It was more of a selling position. I was selling a system, a cash management system to corporations. But I shouldn't say
the
I was.
Bank of America?
Yes. There was a sales force. I was actually kind of an implementation manager. So I you know, made all it happen. Once the sale happened, I made it all go. So by the grace of God, it all worked out. But if it didn't, I was the first line of defense that they called to call me up.
So they were selling the system that they obviously developed to other banks, I'm assuming?
Yes. And they used it in-house as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's very different from writing. Okay. How did you end up getting that position with Bank of America?
I got it through the grace of God. It all worked out. But if it didn't, I was the first line of defense that they called to call me up.
So they were selling the system that they obviously developed to other banks, I'm assuming?
Yes. And they used it in-house as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's very different from writing. Okay. How did you end up getting that position with Bank of America?
I got it through the grace of God. It all worked out. But if it didn't, I was the first line of defense that they called to call me. And I said, why not? You know, I just, you know, used all my skills for management and implementing projects. And
Good for you.
So, yeah.
I used to do system stuff, but it, you know, I'm just thinking of your journalism. That's definitely not, you know, I was wondering if you somehow got to write in there, but you didn't. So, okay.
No.
Just put that on hold.
No.
But I'm sure it was challenging. I know systems implementations are very challenging.
I mean, I was very hands-on too with clients as well. Yeah. So, and that's the good part I liked about it as well. You know, the people part rather than the, you know, do I have all the documents and, you know, signed
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay. So then you go to San Francisco, you meet your soon to be husband.
Yes.
And then where?
Yeah. And then I came back to Chicago after 3 years, still with the bank. At the time we got engaged.
Okay.
And he's from North Dakota. And his mom was getting on in years. So it was a better commute if there was a commute from Chicago to North Dakota than San Francisco to North Dakota. So logistics wise, it all worked out.
Yeah.
And everything that we ended up. After we married, I just was not happy still working at the bank. It was dry. Not that the people were dry. I enjoyed the people, but the work. And I was just missing the creative people working with art directors and in coming up with, you know, solutions to things. And my husband said, well, why don't you take the summer off? Take the summer off. We can swing it financially, you know, see what's next. So I took the summer off and I never went back to work.
And how long ago was that?
So that was 27 years ago.
27. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And good there was the birth of my writing. And I kept a journal for a while. And then I said, you know, in the process of trying to figure out, you know, where I was in my life, the next step, I just kind of wrote all of these experiences, things that happened all the way back to when I was a kid. And I thought, okay, now what do I do this? And I said, I'm going to write a memoir. And that was the beginning of me studying the craft. What does that mean? It's not an autobiography. It's right. not a timeline of everything that I'm writing, who I saw, and, you know.
And where did you study?
I studied books. I studied all self-studied.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, more courses?
No, no courses. Okay. No.
Mm-mm. Wow.
Yeah. And so I wrote a first draft and knew it was too autobiography. Hmm. But I started working with a developmental editor and got some critiques who helped me along the way, did some hand-holding. And from there, it really developed into a thematic memoir, which basically my Under the Birch Tree, it's discovering connections and finding home. So it all, I all went back to my first pivotal moment was when I was probably like 7 or 8 and I had a birch tree growing in my front yard. And I noticed it one spring morning, there were these little baby bunnies in a nest in kind of the curb underneath the tree. Mm. And my brother came, said, this is really cool. He took them out, put them in a box, a shoebox, and took them to show his friends. And I was traumatized. So that little micro story turned into finding our places in life. Making those connections and how do we do that? For me, it was a birch tree, which became really synonymous with home. I loved the look of a birch tree, just all how it literally looked, figuratively, how it meant. Mm-hmm. It just, the memoir evolved from there. So that was my thread that every time I saw a birch tree, wherever I would go, whether it would be an adverse experience, it would remind me of home. And it would just kind of place me in a settling position where I would feel unsettled.
Wow. So when I did my memoir, it was like a few years, you know. What did you have a certain time frame of your life that it was?
No, I kind of skipped. So I took those pivotal moments. So it would be, you know, the birch tree, you know, parents' divorce, high school, really coming of age. Oh gosh, college. So there were specific instances that I pulled. That fed my story of how I, of the reflection and finding really my place to be, where that is.
Wow. I got to get that one next. Wow. Okay. So you did the memoir and then you published it. Did you have a publisher and all that?
Actually, I didn't. However, the developmental editor that I was working with She Writes Press. And she said, well, is it your intention to publish with She Writes Press? And I said, well, I thought this manuscript really has a little bit more of a ways to go. But sure, you know, I would love to talk to them. So she introduced me to Brooke Warner, the publisher. And we got the manuscript all polished up and the rest was history. So I published with them and I couldn't have been more happy. I mean, it just everything from the cover to the pages.
Wow. That is so great. When I was going to publish mine, what I was told was, nobody wants to read about you. They only want to read about famous people. So right. No, so I ended up self-publishing and, you know,
sure.
I didn't know what I was doing. I had some people helping me with the writing, but I didn't have anybody to help me with the publishing and stuff. So it took me 7 years, but I figured out
how
to do
it. But you did it, right.
Yeah, I did it. I didn't, you know.
Yeah.
So good for you for getting a publisher. I mean, I'm sure, you know, they had more experience than I
Yeah.
Had.
Well, I think one of the thing that, as I look back on it, the reviews that came in were, my gosh, this is so relatable. What happened to you happened to me. And that experience carried me through the rest of my writing. Whatever I was going to write, I wanted to make it relatable, that people would identify with, that they could, the characters I would create, that they could relate to those characters, they liked them or didn't like them. Mm-hmm. So the memoir was really a good stepping stone to writing fiction and into writing essays and writing further.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah. So, all right. I want to ask you about the book, but let's just go sequentially. Okay. So you wrote the memoir, you had it published, and then what? I know you were writing essays during that time.
Oh, and I was still writing, you know, some essays for Chicago Writers Association, other different blogs in submitting. I also kept up a monthly blog on my website, which are smaller essays, but really just tried to write about experiences that somebody else may have with some reflection and what I may have learned from it. And then I think I got to a point where I said, okay, I don't want to pigeonhole myself into being a personal essay memoir writer. What's next? Mm-hmm. You know, writers certainly want to just kind of keep going and explore what they can, where they can go. So my next step really happened organically. I was out at a walk in the woods, which I go and run or walk. And I came upon a little bridge, which goes over a branch of the Chicago River. And I must have been in the right place at the right time. I looked over the bridge and the sun was hitting the water and it just exploded in sparkles. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is really cool. It looks like diamonds. So I thought about the scene and I thought, oh, that would be cool if there was a little boy in a red cap with a stick and he was poking, you know, the banks down below and his dad was seeing something different. And I walked back home and I just had that scene in my head. And I sat down, I wrote my first short story called When the Sun Kissed the River, submitted it, and it was published.
So where was it published? Where was it published?
Adelaide Literary Magazine.
Okay, so in a magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
So I thought, oh man, okay, now that I kind of get the gist of this, for a while I said, I can't write fiction. I mean, my gosh, you have to make this stuff up, right?
Yes, but that was your very first fiction. Like before that, it was all memoir-ish.
Okay. Correct.
Wow.
It was all nonfiction, personal essay, you know, writing what I knew.
That moment with the sun, not really.
Yeah.
Did
another, you know, it was not a coincidence.
Wow.
Because usually I stay on my path and I thought, oh, yeah. I'm going to veer off and go up this little bridge. It's short.
Yeah. That was great. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So then what?
Yeah. So awesome. I thought, well, let me try this fiction thing. So I started writing a book length story, which I thought of a title. Well, actually, I had characters. I wanted to write a story about women, like four women, three women, whatever the amount was. But women who were so different, who were sisters, but had a common bond of being in the family, of a family structure. And I originally had called the book The Fabric of Our Lives, but I realized that people might equate that with the commercial of cotton, and it's not a book about cotton. Yeah. So the sub-story that is currently in the book was the original theme. And in the story, you'll notice that each sister has like a textile, a fabric. Rose mm-hmm. has a tapestry, and Deborah's got a tablecloth. Linny's got a cotton rug under her feet. And each of those, by the nature of the fabric, represents their personality, is part of their personality. Mm. So that's where the fabric of our lives came through. But I kind of nixed that. I thought, well, but what's the story here? You know, that's kind of nice.
So when did you have the fabric part? Before you wrote it? Like when you were coming up with it?
Yes, pretty much. Yeah.
Okay. So you hadn't actually written the story yet. You were just...
No. I had my characters. I had...
Did you take any courses or anything to learn how to do that? Or you just did it?
No.
No? Wow.
No.
Because they're so developed. I love each sister. You know, they were so... I feel like I knew them. Like I understood them. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how I wanted to write a book, you know?
Yeah.
Write them different. But still have family as a common bond.
Was Charlotte always part of it?
Yeah.
She was, but she didn't get her own fabric.
No, she didn't. But what she did get was the responsibility by her mom to keep the secret.
Right.
And her mom told her, go in the attic, get the chest, look in the chest.
Yeah.
There's a box in there and an envelope with your name on it.
And so, how did the mother get the fabric? The first one had stored her stuff there. So I got that.
Yeah, they all kind of ended up storing their stuff.
So that's where,
Yeah.
Like, wow, how did she get these?
Yeah, they all, I kind of wove that in she got in a box, and then there was a scene with Margaret and Joe in the closet, and what was all in here, and the box, and so I tried to kind of make sure that there was like a central point with all that.
Okay, wow. Yeah. All right, so you had the fabric, and then where'd you go from there?
And then I always loved a willow tree. Mm. I thought, well, I'm just going to keep this thread going about trees and kind of a reflection of trees and a metaphor, story with metaphor. So I wove in the tree, the wisdom of the willow, as Margaret sits under that tree and gives the base of her teaching and her children's learning underneath that tree and teaches them wisdom. And I'm a big reader and writer of the natural world and how everything is connected. So I wove that in as well. Mm. Margaret's teaching is wisdom of how we are all connected within our natural world. The trees talk to each other, just a natural organic place to be as we sit among the outside.
Wow. I mean, I haven't been under a willow tree probably since I was a kid, but can you really sit under it?
They're
that big?
Yeah, you can. There's a scene where Joe drags a picnic table under it, and also I think a quick scene that he's trimming the branches of the willow so that they don't hit the ground. And then I think it is... one of the sisters, and I forget who, sees Joe, the dad, mowing under the willow tree, and then she sees little rabbits. It says, stop, oh my gosh, So the willow tree still becomes a central figure. And then
was that from your bunny scene with your brother?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I dropped that in.
First, I didn't know what happened. I had to reread it again to go, oh, he saved him. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was yelling at her. I thought she was like, but no, she saved the bunny.
She stopped in front of the lawnmower, and her dad said, stop. Yeah.
Wow, that was cool. Yeah, now I see where that came from. So, okay. So then, so you got all that going. And then when did you have that before you started writing? Or did you just start writing? Like, did you
Started writing. Yeah. I usually, when I write fiction, I start with the characters, basically, who I think, who to me are driver of the story. Because what happens to them, what's going on in their lives, their experiences, to me is a driver of the plot. You know, here they are as is, something happens, they change, and then what is the end? How are they now? So I start with the characters, which I do. I do a kind of a sketch. They each have a piece of paper, and from everything to physical, to personality, to the what happens. And then from there, I circle around and sketch out my plot, the bigger picture. And Margaret and Joe, and Margaret, unfortunately, develops a disease, you know, has the cancer, and the mother figure that they have looked on is, you know, it really becomes a bad situation because they've depended on her for this guidance. But yet Margaret in the first paragraph, I think in the prologue, says, "I really hope I have given my daughters the wisdom of the willow to find their places in life."
Now, I thought it was interesting, and I don't want to give away the whole book, but can I ask you anyway?
Yeah, of course.
Because you know that she's gone, because there's a scene, I don't know where it was, somewhere in the middle, where she's gone, like Joe's, you know, just... But then she's alive again. Do you know what I mean? So you know she's going, but you still get to live her.
Yes.
You still get to have her. Do you know
exactly
what I mean? What?
Right.
Why did you, what was the thinking of that?
I still wanted to keep her memory going throughout the story because it was such a big part, a character part of the story. And a driver, it started with her, and I wanted to make sure that she and her memory were ended in the story as well.
Oh, so was the beginning, maybe I missed that part, where you already knew that she was going from the...
Yeah, it was just kind of a flashback, yes.
Right, okay. Yeah, because I was just kind of like, oh, she's gone, and then, oh, but she's back, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of it went back and forth, so that was interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was great. It was very enjoyable and definitely a page turner, you know.
Oh, like, thanks. Yeah.
I wanted to find out what happened. So how did you come up with everything? It just comes? Like, does it just come to you, or like each character and the marriages and the this and the relationships?
Yeah. You know? When I was figuring out my characters, I first thought, okay, what's relatable here? What happens in everyday life? Okay, women get divorced. There's a professional woman, Rose, who's an actress, right? And
right.
She just hides behind all her characters because she doesn't know what she's doing, where she wants to go, or who she wants to be. And that could be anybody in any job. Like they sit and they're thinking, okay, I'm just doing this. I'm going along, but who am I really? And where am I headed? You know, a small shop owner who just loves her job, loves her boss, you know, cherishes every moment, but yet that is shattered or cannot happen anymore when her boss, you know, dies. And, you know, that whole thing becomes in jeopardy when she thought she knew where she was, you know, and she doesn't, you know.
Now, would you say some of that, like, were parts of you? Would you say each one had parts of you?
Probably. Personality-wise?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, Deborah, the, you know, no bones about it. She just goes in the meetings, you know, but she loves people. She loves meeting people. You know, let's see, Rose, doing a job. Sure. I was in my, you know, working for the bank and I'm like hiding behind this. And I kept saying, I am not a banker. I'm just not a banker. You know, nothing against bankers. Or anything,
right. But no, you're creative.
But yeah, not my thing. Okay. And, you know, small business owner, gosh, loving the writing, loving what I'm doing. But, you know, am I really where I'm supposed to be, you know? So yeah, there's a little bit of me in each character. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. All right. So we're going to take our little commercial break and then we're going to talk some more about the
great,
the wisdom of the willow by Nancy Chadwick. Yeah, really great story. Okay. We'll be back after, what is it? A word from our sponsor.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to RealTalkWithHillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
And thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you want to bring experiential social emotional learning to your classrooms, to your children, to your businesses, to your teams, check out KikoriApp.com and schedule a time to talk to one of their wonderful employees or owners. And as always, I will shamelessly promote my own books because I can. This was my memoir. It's called The Second Piece of French Toast. You're not allowed to judge me, but it's a very juicy story. You can read it in a day. It's really kind of quick. This one is all about speaking up, which I found out that I didn't do when I wrote the first book. The first person who read that story said, "Why didn't you speak up?" And I was like, I didn't even know I didn't. So anyway, this is about real talk, learning how to speak up. And you can definitely contact me if you relate to it. At Hillary@gettingrealwithhillary.com. And then this one is about, it's called Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. And this is about if you find yourself on kind of like the left side of life, that's what I call it, where things don't look so good. This is about tools and techniques that I developed to get back to the right side where things are a lot more fun. So anyway, those are my 3 books. Love to hear from you. And you can find them all on Amazon. And now we're going to bring back our guest of today. Author, writer, essayist, and wife, Nancy Chadwick. Hello.
Hello.
All right. So where do you want to go from here? You develop your characters. And, for me, it was like I would always be afraid of having to remember the details, like, because you're making it up. You know, when you're writing memoir, it's true. It's your experience.
Right.
It's your truth. No one can say, "We already said that over there," or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's your stuff. But when you're writing a book, it's kind of like, how do you keep track of it all?
Well, I am a highly organized individual.
Okay.
Always have been. So when I started writing fiction, book length, The Wisdom of the Willow, I had a notebook and I would start to write basically in a very overview what I wanted the story to mean, what I wanted the story to say. And then it would go in different phases. Then I would go back and I'd essentially rewrite it and I'd plug in, okay, I want it to go from here to here to here, but in between these two points, I want this to happen. So it was a continuous rewriting in my notebook of what I had. And as far as the characters go, which was always the first thing I started with, I just basically hand wrote out my characters. It's a character sketch. I kind of kept the same, what did they look like, personality, what happens to them, kind of, as an outline bullet point and filling it in. But at least I always had that. Then I'd have a separate page for setting. Where is this being set? Setting, time frame, when does it happen? Season, what season is it?
Wow.
So I would get those specifics. But it
So
to
when
me.
you're like when you're creating a character, like where does that come from? You're just inventing, you're just creating, it just flows, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I do a lot of observing when I'm out in the natural world. That's all I do. It's an opportunity for me to leave all the noise behind, to sit and to only concentrate on that which my senses are pinging, what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing, what I'm smelling. And it's a very focused, almost a meditation kind of a thing, actually. And so when I am out in the world, I transfer those practices to where I am. So if I am standing in a grocery line and I'm seeing people in front of me, I will note how they're dressed, how they speak, their mannerisms. Are they alone or with somebody? Are they young or old? How their posture is. And so those details I learned to hone in on and then transfer those to creating characters.
Interesting. And do you have to write them down or do you remember them? Like, are you?
Sometimes I do write them down, yeah, but mostly I remember. And I always reason that I remember these details for a reason. So for instance, a young woman with blonde hair but a streak of red coming down, that's something I'll remember. So I might create a character, she may have black hair with a white streak, whatever. But so I just remember the hair or jewelry, a big chunk of jewelry or something. It's not maybe specific, but that, she had a big rip in the knee of her jeans. She probably paid $300 for those jeans for to wear with a rip in the knee, So that could be a little thing on the side about this character. She doesn't care, how much money she spends, but she's gonna wear some damn nice expensive jeans, even though they look like they just came from a shredder.
Now, were you always observant like that, or was that just something that you started doing after?
I think I always have been, because I noticed the little bunnies when I was a little kid underneath, in the little nest. And I remember even as a kid in a big snowstorm, I would love to venture out and I'm a walker, always have been, and I just kind of walk around my house and, put little footprints in the snow and would just look how the snow is on the trees, listen how quiet it was. So I always have been. And, even when I was probably got into teenage years, I had a sketchbook and I would just in a charcoal pencil, and I would just sketch what I saw, literally what I saw. So a lot of trees,
Wow.
Depending on the sunlight, how it was hitting a tree trunk. So whether it was in complete shadow or half of it was lit. And then the texture of the bark. So, just always very observant.
So that was natural for you. So when you said you wanted to write the mini stories for when you wanted to get into advertising,
yeah,
would you say you're doing that now? You're doing...
Yeah. Oh, sure.
You're doing what you always wanted because
sure.
You're getting to create.
Yeah.
You're just not selling with it, but right. You're...
I'm still creating characters.
Yeah.
Creating a theme, creating a need, you know, for a consumer, for a book buyer. Why would somebody want to read my book?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm still, with the point, making the point of answering those questions.
So, and when the person said after your first one that it was so relatable, is that, I mean, I don't know. I'm just wondering, like, if what anybody writes is relatable, probably not. It's probably a gift that you have, but, you know, it was relatable. But is that, like, when you said, you know, why would someone read it? What would your answer be?
I think to see, first of all, not only what my experience was, what my circumstances were, and I'll go back to my memoir, like in high school, that's when my parents divorced and, just felt extremely lost and just, you know, alone maybe. So, going through the experiences, that I did, it's how I got out of it. So might be an example for somebody else to say, oh, how did she handle that? You know, well, maybe I ought to try that kind of thinking, to reach out to other people or whatever, however I handled the experience.
Now, did you, because I know when I wrote mine, I wanted to, you know, it was about a time in my life when I felt stuck. I was in my marriage and I didn't know how the hell I'd gotten here. And I felt that because I had gone out of it, you know, even though, you know, maybe I don't look so good because of the things I did in it, but I wanted to write it in case someone else had gone through that.
Sure, sure.
But then sometimes I would have the thought, and I don't know if you did, like, who wants to read about me? You know what I mean? Like, why, you know, it's like that negative side, like that I talked about in this book.
Yeah.
It's stuck
yeah.
over there going, nobody wants to read what you wrote. Are you kidding me? You know, and it's that negative
sure.
brain.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Did you ever have those thoughts?
Most through the whole memoir. Yeah. When I was writing all the different, you know, and the critiques would come back and I was trying to find what that thread is that would really want people to read this because it was so unconventional.
Are you talking about the first one or the second?
Yes, the first one.
The first one, okay.
Yeah. It was very unconventional. I wasn't writing about a single thing that happened to me. Nothing really tragic happened. Mm-hmm. But when I would go back and write that, I need to write it in a way that a reader will have a takeaway. And I would write of the reflection, and then I would say, well, maybe this is what I should have done, or this is what I have done. And because of this, it made me, you know, a stronger person. And maybe in the future, so it kind of lends itself to when a reader reads that, they get thinking and will think, well, okay, she did this. Maybe I should try that too.
Hmm. Now, when you say nothing tragic happened, I mean, I would think to a child, a divorce could, I mean, it's not tragic, someone dies, but that's
pretty
life changing. All of a sudden, you know, you don't have the same home and your parents are in different places and where do you belong? And what if they find new people? You know, I would think that would, and I'm sure a lot of people have gone through it. So I'm sure that was very helpful.
Yeah. And when I say tragic, I mean, as opposed to other memoirs out there are you know, like alcoholism or, you know, just horrible, tragic physical accident or drug addiction.
Abuse.
Horrible things. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So, and was it hard for you to come up with those things? Like, maybe I should have done this, or maybe, or that was just part of your reflection always?
No, it wasn't. But yes, it was difficult because I did a lot of editing. I had to pull out so much stuff that had nothing to do with what I was saying, you know, with the connection. So I had to find that theme. And it took me, 15 years, you know, by the time I first wrote it. I wrote, you know, versions. I put it in a drawer for, 2-3 years, took it back out. And then I would send it out for critiques. So probably 3-4 different critiques, come back, revise. You know, so I was in no hurry. I certainly knew this was going to be a work in progress here for sure.
And was that when you were married, part of the 27 years where you weren't working at your job?
Correct. That was all I was working on. And you know, I was doing the personal essays on my blog, just kind of, you know, side things, but the memoir was it.
So did you ever think, like when you put it in the drawer for 2-3 years, because I'm sure a lot of people have done that. Did you ever think you would take it out? Or did you just say, I've had it enough? You know,
at
like,
the time
what
I
was
did,
you thinking? Yeah.
At the time I did, I said, I've had it. This is going nowhere. Who the hell wants to read this about a tree? And, you know, it's somebody who had all these experiences, right? What makes this hoop-de-doo? So, and I let it percolate, you know, I just kept thinking about it. And then eventually I pulled it out and I said, damn, I have been through years of working on this. I'm not going to let this go. I'm going to see this through to the end. And so I just kept going and going and plugging.
Yeah. Wow. And then when it was finally published, what did you say?
It was. It was what my mother said with, you know, her mouth wide open. I mean, she was a little upset. God rest her soul. I said, you know, Mom, as I tried to have a heart to heart, this book really is not about you. I didn't mend this for you to feel, you know, in a very bad place, but this was me. This is about what happened to me and what I went through and so forth. And I said, but Mom, how's the writing? How did you like the writing? Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful writing. She said, just beautiful writing. So at least
I got
there. Right.
Yeah. Well, did she ever get over it?
I think she did. Yeah. I think she did. I don't think she forgot, but I think she moved on.
When I wrote I did change the name of my ex, but I let him read it ahead of time, but I changed the name, but still I was going to change my name, but then I just, you know, I asked lawyers and stuff and they said, you know, if it's your truth, if it's my truth, it's a story to write. And yeah, so I changed his name. I changed a couple of other people who might have been incriminated as well.
Absolutely.
But the one thing when he read it, you know, he didn't say nice. He just said, take out this one thing where he was sitting on the couch drinking a beer.
Oh, okay.
That was it.
Okay.
Of all the other stuff he left in. And I was like, all right. Wow. So I was shocked.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Later on, he's like, I really don't like that book. But he never commented on the writing or anything. It was really just how it was about him. So
nice, though. Yes.
Well, it's like when you see a picture, right? Where do you go? You go to look at yourself, right? You don't go to look at
people. Exactly. Right.
You don't care how they look.
Right? Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting about your mother. What were other people's reactions?
They liked it. And that was it. Family, you know, just a few family members I, you know, had read it, but friends that I'd grown up with, oh my gosh, they liked it. They just thought it was great. And the writing, you know, the prose. Yeah. So it was very positive. So I was okay. I was
okay. Now, is this new one out? And I just have to tell you, there were some pages down and some comments, and this was your copy. I don't know if you knew, if you were looking for it. It had like some corrections in it.
Oh, okay. That's okay. Not a problem, because it the book was released May 7.
Okay. All right. So it's out. So you don't
it
need to go back.
It is
so
out.
At first I was like, well, how did that page get turned down? And then I saw a couple of, you know, circles, you know, where with comments and stuff. And I was like, uh-oh, I hope you're not.
Oh, no.
You know, I have this and you're not.
You know,
Yeah. Like you had checked something off here, you know. So I was like,
oh, gosh. I probably pulled it when I was doing some edits or something, and I apologize you didn't get a clean copy.
But. No, it's fine. I was just afraid, and I kept forgetting to tell you that you weren't looking for it.
Yeah, no, no, changes. No.
Yeah, no,
I had just a few left, and so it must have gotten in the stack.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay.
It's fine. It was perfect. But I was kind of like, oh, this is a really cool copy because
yeah,
you were
it is a cool copy.
Yeah, I just want to make sure you knew and that you weren't missing it. So this book, Wisdom of the Willows, was released May 7th?
Correct, yes.
Okay. And then where can people find it?
You can find it on Amazon, bookshop.org, Barnes & Noble. It is widely distributed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's by Nancy Chadwick.
Uh-huh.
And then what would you say, like, if this book could have a long-lasting effect and you could impact the world with this book or just with your writing in general, what kind of impact would you like to have on the world?
I think that's a good question. I think, and I don't mean to sound really preachy, but because our natural world is kind of slipping from us in mm-hmm. every way, I think we owe it to ourselves to go out into the natural world, to sit, to appreciate it, to listen to it, to find ourselves, and I know that sounds cliche, but to really look inside ourselves and where we're meant to be and where we're meant to go. And that is not meant to be looked at as any lofty goal that, you know, may be out of our reach, but something that is small, you know, something very, very insignificant to others, but maybe significant to you. And I started writing probably less than a year ago on Substack, and I called my Substack, I don't know if you're familiar with Substack.
Mm-mm.
It is a writing platform that is become very popular with writers. Mm. I do write on there as often as I can. But I called it Finding the Simple in a Complicated World. And because our world now is so complicated, and we have gotten so caught up into it, and sometimes find ourselves being not ourselves, we get caught up in all the vitriol and the anger, and we're just tired, that we owe it to ourselves to go out into the natural world, to decompress, to just let it all go, and to just kind of try to renew ourselves and find out where we're supposed to be.
Hmm. And when you say natural world, you just mean going outside?
A park, you know, walking through the woods, somewhere where there is less people and cars and activity and more green space, growing things.
Hmm. Wow. And it seems like you've always gravitated towards trees.
I think I have.
Woods and trees. Because I love the water. I live by the water and that's my natural space. But I never thought of it as like a thing. I know I get more relaxed. I know
yes.
I can find
oh, sure.
peace. If I take a walk.
Right.
You know, I go out.
Yeah.
And then I come back like, oh, it's a wonderful world.
Yeah.
You know, somehow it all that evaporates. I don't know why, but there's something about nature. Yeah. Where did you first find nature?
I think I've always liked parks, going to parks, you know, but not, not a real swing set kind of activity park, but out, you know, maybe set aside where I would sit and kind of observe what was in front of me, maybe. And then moving to the house where I am now, there's 5 minutes away from a forest preserve and a bike path. And that goes, that stretches north and south. And I can take my bike all the way to the Chicago Botanic Garden, which is very near me, which I go and walk and just find a nice quiet spot. And yeah, so I'm very lucky and grateful.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. So sit and appreciate, listen. I liked what you said before about the senses.
Yes.
Smell, see, maybe touch, listen.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I think in our normal everyday life, we are so bombarded and it's just information overload that everything shuts down, really. And it kind of make you nuts and crazy and angry and act out. But, you know, you removing yourself from that to a natural space that where you can tune that out. And then it really takes practice, really, to know, to concentrate on doing that, to leaving your thoughts out there and shifting your thoughts to where you are in the present moment.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Take
thank
a deep you. Breath. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much for everything. We're out of time, but I just want to thank Nancy Chadwick and her book, The Wisdom of the Willow. And thank you so much for what you're doing for the world. It's beautiful.
Great. Thanks, Hillary. Great conversation.
Thank you. Yes, I enjoyed it. Bye.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.